Shalom Aleichem, Chaver. This is Binyamin Hammer, National Council in Israel. We welcome Rebbe for Shabbos Rebbe Willig, number 49, our Erev Pesach special. Thank you, Rebbe.
You're very welcome. I'll try to be makater the first 14 questions in order to be able to spend more time on the 15th one, about Mechiras Chametz. Question number one. Dog ownership has become very popular in my neighborhood. Some parents think it teaches children new dimensions in relationships and think it's therapeutic. Recently, some people have been walking their dogs on Shabbos afternoon and bring them to the shul grounds and even into the shul lobby during afternoon children's groups. Besides the comfort of the shul, I am concerned that this could cause discomfort to some children who don't see dogs as their, quote, best friends, end quote. Also, I am concerned about the impression that dog owning is a popular and normal activity for a firm family, while I see it as a distraction from our goals of raising a Torah-focused family and would only recommend it in particular cases of need. Can I recommend how go about changing this trend and activating a policy created the shul and which be the shul grounds as well as a no-dog zone? The president will help with if a mahalach is there. Okay. I think the rabbi is correct that owning a dog is a distraction. It's a distraction for a Torah family. And I believe that instead of focusing on the negative, we should be focusing on the positive. Not that this is us or that's us, but rather the other way around. Raising a family requires much focus. It's chaval to expend a portion of the time and focus that parents have on a dog. Now, this is not to indicate that the halacha frowns upon the existence of dogs. To the contrary, right? Dogs, you know that lakelef tashlichon also, we give rewards to dogs. In general, we believe in taking care of animals properly. The first feed the animals before you even eat yourself. And Tzaba L'chaim is the Raisa. On the contrary, we have a very, very progressive, if you will, attitude towards Balei Chaim. But here's where it gets tricky. If the proprietor buys a pet, a dog, that individual accepts a measure of responsibility. The Gemara has an expression for it. Mizonosam Alecha. When it's Mizonosam Alecha, you have the responsibility. It should be taken seriously as other halachic ramifications. But for our purposes, once it reaches Mizonosam Alecha, you have responsibility which is going to take you away from the focus on your family, and your responsibility to your own children has precedence. This is what I would focus on. I know that there are those who claim that it's therapeutic in relationships. I'm not here to argue that point, whether it's in fact the case or not the case. One can obviously find two different opinions. What I'm here to say is, I think the questioner is correct, that it should not be encouraged. And not because of disrespect to animals, but because we have X amount of koichas. I sometimes hear from people, they want to know, they ask me a question, should they plan on having an additional child? They have already three children, and they're so overwhelmed with these three that they're afraid they have a fourth child, it'll take them away from the better parenting of the first three children. In that case, I usually tell them, no, it's worthwhile having another child, and you'll figure out how to handle all four. But that's where you bring another Jewish child into the world. But to bring a dog into your house and spend time and energy and focus on the dog, which takes you away from spending more time with your children, I think it's yotza schara behafsedo, and I think it should not be encouraged. Now, once that statement is made, we can then say that we don't encourage it, and therefore we do not allow it in any of the shul grounds. It's a no dog zone, not because we don't have, you know, concerns of Bala Chaim. Tzar Bala Chaim Daraisa. But we're not trying to encourage this new trend, if you will, which I believe is a net negative for Klal Yisrael by allowing the dogs into the shul property. We can't stop people from having dogs in their homes, but having them in shul property would be kind of imprimatur. It's a good idea, and I believe in most cases it's not a good idea. And I believe, again, that the rabbi should be focusing on the positive, because we're only human. We have only a certain amount of time and focus, which we should be spent on our families and not on dogs. That's my take. Question number two. A woman accidentally purchased OUD salad dressing for a collective fleshik Purim Suda. Now that it has already been served, her husband noticed that it's dairy. Presumably there is no actual bishul d'oraisa, so you have to let us meet with a dairy first salad. Is there a requirement of tshuva on the rabbanan b'shogeg, for which she must be notified? She is normally very diligent in hechsherim. Must he tell her of her mistake and presumably make her feel very pained and foolish? Well, it's not just a question of informing her. If you have to inform her, we have to inform the whole guest list of the collective Purim Suda, because they also may have consumed this food. It's well known as a machlokas gedolei aposkim. Do you require tshuva for an isa derabbanan and b'shogeg? There's an esivus about it. There's a meshachoch when parshas ekev about it. Many poskim are lenient. In my view, in this case, we can be leaning for an additional consideration. It's not clear to me that the OUD salad has enough dairy in it to make it actually dairy lahalacha. The OU is very strict. There's any dairy whatsoever. And sometimes, even if it's only dairy equipment, they will write down OUD. And we would have to call the OU to find out if there was shishim. There was 60 times as much of the other ingredients as opposed to the dairy ingredient, then strictly speaking, it would be really parva. Not that we allow it and recommend it, but technically speaking, it would be parva. And therefore, for this, in combination with the other opinion in the Rishonim and Achronim, that there, even if there would have been a really Siddur Rabbanan B'shogeg, no tshuva is needed, I would say that nothing should be said. Question three. May one's children play with Play-Doh contains wheat on Pesach? Once again, big machlokas gedolei aposkim on this one. Some compare it to kupa sa'ar, sugi mesechta psachim, daf men hey. If it's miyuchad for something else, miyuchad the yeshiva is a chair, it loses its status of chametz. That very likely applies to Play-Doh as well. Nonetheless, since it's technically speaking edible, and the company makes sure that it's no poison in it, because kids sometimes swallow it, they put it in their mouth. So there are those dissenting points of view. I believe it's customary in our circles that you put the Play-Doh away with the rest of the chametz and sell it, which we'll discuss the sale at the end of the shiur today. Question four. Is it necessary to have a waterproof layer for Pesach on one's year-round chametz table, or does a fabric tablecloth suffice? I believe that a fabric tablecloth suffices. Five. May one kasher a microwave for Pesach, and if yes, how? Well, this is another tumul, microwaves. It's a very, very long discussion. Do microwaves become, if you will, chomistic in the first place? And the question becomes, does the roof get hot, too hot to touch, no yatsa lettuce bowl, with respect to a microwave or not? Remember, there's no fire there. The microwave is... ceiling is becoming hot only from the food. The food gets hot through the microwaves. So it's very doubtful that it either became yatsa lettuce in the first place. Of course, Pesach is a very strict holiday. We're machu even for mashu. So one who wants to put away the microwave, it wouldn't be a bad idea. Remember, you can't use it on Shabbos, can't use it on Yontif. The whole difference is 3 days of Chol HaMoed. Maybe it's a good idea to put it away. But if you want to be technical, I looked it up in the OU magazine that came a few days ago. There they say that you can kasher a microwave by cleaning it out very carefully. Make sure there's nothing there. if it has a glass base, they say the glass should be replaced. I'm not sure how easy it is to replace it. Perhaps if you cannot replace it, you can cover it. And then you can kosher it by putting boiling water in it. If you take a styrofoam cup, you put it in the microwave. They say in 10 minutes it'll steam up completely. Kabola kapoto, it came in with steam, goes out with steam. You have to do it twice because the area under the cup itself is not kosher. So you do it in two different places and that would do the trick. And they require you to cover the window in the front with either cardboard or contact paper. That's what it says. Now, it's interesting, in the magazine, it said, for those who kosher plastic for Pesach. So I used to always say not to do so, because Rav Moshe is quoted by Rabbi Felder in the Sefer on koshering, that although Rav Moshe was naked of the kosher plastic, that was all year long, but not on Pesach, because you're afraid of a mashu. I'm not convinced today that microwaves are made from plastic. Last night I took a magnet to my microwave, and it held on. It's made from metal. You can't put metal in the microwave. But the microwave itself, since it's made from metal, and metal can be kosher for Pesach, as for the Gemara. So therefore, there is room to be made if necessary. Again, if one wants to put it away for this, not just for those 3 days, perhaps it's advisable. Question 6. Must one be concerned to get every drop of food out of their children's toys, or does it suffice to do a basic cleaning and then just make sure that the toys stay out of the kitchen and off the table? If you look carefully in the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch and Mishnah Berurah, the Bedikas Chametz is looking for what we call a kazayas. Small kazayas, okay, but a kazayas. Not crumbs. We're not required to look for crumbs unless, of course, they come on the table, because it's chalash v'pesach is a mashu. But if they're not on the table, there's no need to look for crumbs. And therefore, it seems to me that the children's toys just be cleaned as, you know, without looking for crumbs, just clean them and keep them away from the table. This should suffice. 7. What guidelines should Rabbanu give the congregants regarding taking medications on Pesach? For example, blood pressure medications, medicines for strep throat, antidepressants, prenatal vitamins, vitamins in general. Here's the answer. It seems to me that, strictly speaking, all regular pills are not chametz at all. They're not royal achila. And therefore, any regular pill can be consumed without any question. Some discuss chewable pills and liquids as being more strict. Depends on the precise circumstances. If one needs one of these medicines, whether it be chewable and liquid, which are more strict, or even regular regular old-fashioned pills, it's worthwhile looking in these lists that come out. There's a particularly long list comes out from Los Angeles. One can look there and other such lists. And you'll find that many, many medicines are not chametz in the first place. There's no chametz there at all. There's kidneys in the chametz, in the pill, it's totally, absolutely no problem. You'll see that almost all of them don't have chametz. If it has chametz, then it would be worthwhile trying to find a substitute. If there's no good substitute, to get the pen. If it's a sakana, for sure it's permissible. Even if shash sakana, pikuach nefesh, even a remote chance. If there's none, then there's room to be mekel b'shas atchak on the grounds that it's not really a food, it's not called chametz, but in some cases it's not so necessary. Or if you can, of course, you can find a substitute, it would be better to do so. 8. Is it permissible to run a regular wash with one's dish towels, tablecloths, and fabric over mitzvah and then use them on Pesach? The answer is yes. 9. I was shown a set of high-tech utensils that are made from stainless steel or some metal, but are completely encapsulated in rubber, spatulas, tongs, serving spoons, and forks. Do they need to be tarbled, if yes, with a bracha? The answer is you should tarble them without a bracha. It's a long discussion, not for now. Question number 10. This Yom Tov, a family in my shul will be hosting their son, a new bride, for this Dar. The son of a yeshiva day school graduate attended a prestigious university and married, a non-Jewish woman. It's terrible. I've been told that she has no interest in converting. Here are some questions. A. Although the family is saddened by this marriage, do they want to maintain a good relationship with their child? Will the acceptance, quote, by the family parcel up the parents from shul membership? In my opinion, the answer is absolutely not. It's a nisayon to deal with an intermarried child. And if someone accepts that child, it could be based on very eminent rabbinic sanction on the grounds that the marriage may break up and they'll have their son back. Otherwise, if they distance him, even if it breaks up, he may never come back. So there may be other considerations. So even if you disagree, you cannot possible the parents from membership. Should the father not receive aliyahs and or kibbutzim? Again, though, he can receive whatever aliyahs and kibbutzim he got until now. We do not consider him to be a terrible person if he decides to try to hold on to his son, even despite the son's intermarriage. He may have, again, gotten rabbinic sanction for it. And in any event, it's not, he didn't do the sin, someone else did the sin. Therefore, he should be allowed to be a member and get aliyahs and other kibbutzim. Female Levim, if the son comes to shul, can he wash the hands of the kohen for dukkanim? Can the father? Again, the father certainly can. The son, that's a tough call. It may depend, at least in part, on the reaction of the kohanim in particular, whose hands would be washed, and of the community in general. Whenever we discuss these things, we try not to offend the sensibilities of members of the shul. They may not be identical. It's up to the local rabbi to figure out what would happen if he paskined that this intermarried lady can wash the Kohen's hands. What would happen if he paskined he cannot wash the Kohen's hands? It's a little tricky. That has to be left to the discretion of the local rabbi. The family has not discussed any halachic questions regarding this scenario. Should I be proactive, meet with the parents? Should I leave it to the gabbai to discuss it with them? Here it's impossible to answer. It depends upon so many circumstances. Maybe it's better to be quiet. Maybe it's better to confront these issues directly. Too many outside unknowns. Question 11. Chometz she'av leva Pesach. Do we extend this issue eternally? Yes. The person didn't sell the chometz. Is it forbidden forever? Yes. Such as whiskey. Companies who didn't sell the chometz. Are the whiskeys also forever? Yes. What about a Baal Tshuva who has a liquor cabinet and only now has begun to sell their chametz? That's an excellent question. Strictly speaking, everything is prohibited. If the Baal Tshuva can't handle that, and the rabbi knows that, so he can just be quiet or speak around the topic and not make a demand, chas v'chalila can lead the Baal Tshuva to chuck the whole thing. Be careful in dealing with such parts of the population. I have to interject that the fact that the liquor cabinet may all be prohibited, and people say it's a hefsid, it's a loss of money, my personal view is that all liquor cabinets should be emptied and thrown into the garbage. Not only because there's probably a lot of chametz shavu pesach in them, but drinking has caused so many terrible problems in our community. Youngsters, even young women, can be seen now consuming whiskey. It's a terrible, terrible thing. It clouds their judgment. They do bad things, bad b'enei habrias, bad b'enei Hashem. We should do everything in our power to eliminate this terrible problem of drinking from our communities. And answering it as chametz shavu pesach is one way to do so. Again, it has to be an honest answer. But I thought I must interject that in this conversation. 12A. A family is preparing for birth. She is going to a midwife whose center has a woman remain for 4 hours after birth. They go on Shabbat to Yom Tov. Can the husband go back with her? Can he drive or be a pastor if they take a cab? In all cases, when it's not time sensitive, it would be better to take a taxi, and then 4 hours later they can take a taxi back. Either they ask the taxi to wait for 4 hours and pay extra dollars, or they're going to hire a different taxi. These days, the best way to hire a taxi, I'm told, is with Uber, the least number of prohibitions. Of course, if she goes to the center and there are non-Jews there, they can do it that way or any other way, and that's much better than the Jewish person doing it him or herself. If she's going back, the husband may, in fact, go back with her. She has the status of a chola, sheyesh basakona, and therefore everything is permissible, technically speaking. Nonetheless, when we are able to do things with what we call the shinui, it's better to do it in that fashion. But we shouldn't spend too much time looking for the shinui. B, if they have to go for a Shabbos birth, can they call a Jewish neighbor by phone to come over and watch the other kids? And can the Jewish neighbor drive to the house to watch the kids? It seems to me that the neighbor is far enough to have to drive. That's not included in what the Chazal called, the Pasuk calls, a shachin karov, a close neighbor. They should find a closer neighbor, and that neighbor should be able to be reached without going into a car in either direction. And that neighbor should be the, quote, coverage for the Shabbos birth. I believe that's an imperative. Find a neighbor who lives very close by, and that should be done. If there's no neighbor anywhere near, that's a problem. That's a problem. You know, if there's no alternative for the individual to drive, it's pikuach nefesh with their kids remaining at home. Can't leave them hefker. Maybe it's a different etzah. An etzah to take the children on the way to the hospital to this person. It's less of a violation if it's on the way to the hospital. Or find different coverage nearby, or have someone come just for Shabbos, stay in the house. The idea of someone driving to your house to be a babysitter, in effect, that's very troubling. So other alternatives should be pursued. 13, is there any allowance for an individual who needs a wheelchair to use an electric wheelchair on Shabbos and Yom Tov? The person would not be able to get out alone without this. That's true. But sometimes it can get out not being alone. You can find a way how to get out in a non-electric wheelchair and have somebody push the wheelchair. That would be better, it seems to me, than using an electric wheelchair. Electric wheelchair is very controversial. They have a Machon Somet version, which some say is good, some say is no good. Even those who say it's good seem to indicate that there would be a rabbinical prohibition. Just that, it's not overtaken and outweighed by some other consideration. Maybe Kovat HaBriyas, to be able to go about by yourself. Shlomo Zalman is quoted as having said that. Nonetheless, seems to me it's preferred if the individual can go into a regular wheelchair and be pushed. That would certainly be better. 14. This issue comes up every year with so many different categories of matzahs. Which is the highest level of machine shmura matzah that should be purchased for the Sedarim and Yom Tov? Well, many poskim say for this time you shouldn't buy machine shmur matzah at all. You should buy hand matzah. The reason being that the matzahs have to be baked the shei matzah mitzvah, the shmur, and the machine doesn't do anything with the shmur. Some say if you press a button, that's considered to be the shmur. Some say that people standing over it considered to be the shmur. I'm not convinced of either. So I think it's preferred for the sedarim to use hand matzah. That's just a side comment. But obviously the questioner here feels they're going to use machine matzah for the Sedarim as well as for the entirety of Pesach. I'm not here to advertise a particular brand. That would not be smart. What I'm here to say is get yourself a good hashkacha. There are many good hashkachas. There's the OU and there's the Broyers and there's Hasidim. They all have good hashkachas for Pesach. If you're looking for a special kind, they have what they call 18-minute matzahs, which is supposed to have a better clean out of the oven preceding them, that would be presumably a heater. Okay, so that's the issue of what kind of matzahs to buy. So I hurried up so we can get to the final question. Question 15, can I discuss the mechiras chometz process with attached documents? I assume everybody on the call has the documents in front of them, either in hard copy or on the computer. There were a number of documents which were circulated, and I'll discuss them one at a time. I believe it's on the very last page the next to the last page of the set is an authorization form. This is obviously used for me, not for anybody else, but I used it last year, and anyone who wants to use it and just put their name in, it's fine with me, I have no problem. This is to be filled out by anybody who wants to sell the chametz to the rabbi. I, the undersigned, fully empower and permit the rabbi to act in my place instead and in my behalf to sell all chametz possessed by me knowingly or unknowingly. People always worry they forgot about it. So you include it. As defined by Torah and rabbinic law, does it work if you don't know about it? Not sure, but it certainly can't hurt. And to lease all places in which the chametz owned by me may be found, the reason for the lease is twofold. The lease will be as we shall see later, a tool to enable other kinyanim, methods of acquisition, to be employed, number one. And number two, if it's leased, there's less of a problem of any kind of chametz which the Jew may have some kind of measure of achrayus, responsibility. It's possible that if it's a non-Jew's property, or property even loaned to the leased to the non-Jew, that would eliminate that issue. Especially at every person writes his address, okay? The chametz I possess includes the following. Many poskim say it's supposed to itemize in order to increase what we call the gemiras das, the intention on the part of both parties to sell and buy respectively. So you get to itemize copies of chametz, groceries, liquor, medicine, toiletries, exact location, if anyone wants to know where it is, and the approximate value. Obviously, it's very, very approximate. But just an approximation. Just to get a ballpark figure. So that's what's included. And I gave you six boxes to fill out. Date. Right? This is from last year, April blank, 2016. Total, the value. Signed. And under the signature is what we call the printed name. People signed it was illegible completely. How's a non-Jew going to be able to read your handwriting? That's why we introduced something called the printed name, which hopefully will be much more legible. This is the authorization. It's a standard form. I use this form for people who actually come and see me. I can email it out to them, but I want them to see me in person. I want to shake their hand. Pick up a handkerchief or a key or a pen, which is the normal way of Kabbalah's Kinyan, which is traditional in this appointment, even though the Rambam writes that Chalipin has no meaning when it comes to appointing an agent, but nonetheless, it's a custom for many, many years. It should be done in that fashion, ideally. If it can't, so you can fax it or email it in. The last page, also complete this form if you'll be away all Pesach. Many go away all Pesach these days. I specifically also ask the rabbi to sell all chametz located anywhere in my home at the above address, at least my entire home. What's this all about? The person is trying to eliminate responsibility of what we call doing called bedikas chametz. Normally, you have to bedikas chametz. If you lease out your entire home, it's not under your control. You'd be potter from bedikas chametz. Some people want to do bedikas chametz. They think it's a mitzvah. Not so sure it's a mitzvah. Many say it's just a way to get rid of the chametz. If you got rid of it some other way, it's just as good. And therefore, since some people want to do the bedika, but they don't want to be bothered with the entire house, they just want to do it in one room. So there's a exemption clause, parentheses, with the exception of blank. You can put in a living room, a bedroom, or whatever room you want, but that room is not included in this lease of the entire home. In this way, you can do a bedika on that property. That's why this is found there. Don't have to do it. The keys to my home can be found with blank. What's that all about? The Mishnah Berurah writes in Tuf Mem Ches. The person sells to a goy and locks the door. The goy can't get in. That's an invalid sale. It makes a joke out of it. That's why if you go away for all Pesach, you have to leave the keys somewhere. And here's more important these days, if you put name and address, you put your cell phone. These days cell phones go everywhere. So therefore, if the non-Jew wants to have your stuff, he can contact you by cell phone. Okay? This concludes document number one. Some of you may, from past years, may have a what's called a Shtar Mechira Bekitzer, a very brief text which is appended to this document. For those who are not seeing me, they fax it in or email it in. I would ask to fill that out. I'm going to read it to you from an additional piece of table which is not included. This is a general, very brief document of sale. I'll read it to you in its entirety. It's less than 5 lines. We, the undersigned, hereby sell all chametz belonging to each and every one of us, respectfully, to the non-Jews come to us for now for many, many years, well over 30 years. John J. Brown. He's a real estate agent in Riverdale. 279 West 231 Street, Bronx, New York. Put the zip. That's his place of business. I got to know him, again, over 30 years ago. He's a real estate agent. So he has, and apparently he's done very well in selling houses to our community in Riverdale, and therefore it's in his interest to be involved in the community. He has also made a lot of money, I hope, from these sales. There's a high percent you get from every house in a high price district. And he's a very wise man, knows about the ways of business, understands what it's all about. And since then, we've been using him exclusively as our non-Jew. He's happy to purchase the chametz, and then he's happy to sell it back to us, as we shall get to, after Pesach is over. That's his name, and that's his address. We also lease the place where such chametz is found at the here and after indicated addresses to Mr. Brown for a period of 10 days. 10 days just to cover you on all sides. The sale and rental are to take place, take effect on, actually have this year's, April 10th, which is Monday, corresponds to 14 Nisan 5777 before 11:35 a.m. That's the earliest Zman for the time when we no longer have, own the chametz, because it becomes hefker, after which it cannot be sold. Further details concerning all the above are recorded in separate power of attorney forms, we call it authorization forms, and a lengthy document of sale. I guess for the record, we should really change the word power of attorney, which we used to call it authorization forms. Perhaps we'll get to do that if we can. In any event, then is a whole list of 20 columns for a name and address and a value. This way, every person signs his own shtar mechir, which is preferred as opposed to the rabbis are on the shtar for all the congregants. I have an additional form for those who want to sell their chametz early. This includes any individual who's going to be in Europe or Eretz Yisrael. For that individual, the regular sale is too late. By the time I sell it, it's already after Chatzos on Monday. Too late to sell it. It also would be worthwhile for any individual who wants to go away the whole Pesach to a hotel or some other place, parents, in-laws, even in this part of the world, because they want to exempt themselves from the obligation of Bedikas Chametz. In order to do that, it's preferred, as the Mishnah Berurah writes, that the sale take place before the obligation of Mechiras Chametz sets in, which it does when it gets dark a week from Sunday night. So this is to take effect on April 9th, that's next week from Sunday, corresponding to 13 Nisan 5777 before 7:15 p.m. That's mincha time before it gets dark. That's what you do not have in front of you. But what we're going to do now is go over what's called the Shtar Mechira itself, the document of sale, which again, is the document which I have. You can feel free to use it and feel free to improve upon it. It's not a problem. We'll read it together. This is taken from 3 years ago. The days of the week happen to be the same. Agreement made on Monday, then it was different dates. Corresponded to 14 Nisan, that stays the same. Before 11:30 a.m. Again, we have 11:35 this year. Eastern Daylight Savings Time. Between Rabbi X of blank. Hereinafter referred to his agent, that's his address, the rabbi's address. And Mr. John J. Brown, 279, West 231, hereinafter referred to as buyer. Whereas, like a good clause with a bunch of three whereases, whereas certain persons whose names are set forth upon certain inventory sheets delivered herewith to the buyer. That's what we spoke about, the authorization form. Here they call inventory sheets. Hereinafter referred to as sellers are desirous of selling all chametz as hereinafter defined, owned by them and in which they have any interest whatsoever. And whereas, each of the said sellers has a designated, appointed, and empowered Rabbi Blank as their lawfully designated agent to sell, transfer, and dispose of all such chametz in such manner and upon such terms as that agent in his sole discretion Shaltim appropriate. This is really make sure that there's a good appointment. And whereas the buyer here and above identified is desirous of purchasing all the tzedchomet of the sellers in accordance to the terms of this agreement. These are all the preambles. Now, therefore, it is agreed by him between the agent as agent for the sellers and each of them, this is legalese, and the buyer, as agent hereby sells and the buyer hereby purchases all chametz belong to each and every one of the persons herein referred to as sellers, whose names are set forth upon the individual inventory sheets of each seller. I must tell you, if we make an oral understanding with the non-Jew, that in case someone appointed the rabbi and his appointment got lost in the mail, or somehow or other got swallowed up in an email or a fax, it's just lost, that's included. Even though it's a bit unusual because he doesn't have the paper to prove it, doesn't make a difference. It can be effective if both parties agree. So we throw that in. We hope it works. If it doesn't work, it won't hurt. That's what we hope that it would happen. Okay? Let's go a little bit further. The term chametz is intended to include all 11 products of the 5 types of grain, wheat, rye, spelt, barley, oats, alcohol, fermentations of any of these grains, or any admixture containing any of the above-mentioned products, including but unlimited to all items specifically enumerated upon the individual inventory sheets of each seller. Again, it's not limited to. You forgot something, it's also presumably considered part of the sale. Unless you didn't know anything about it, then even though we put that there also, knowingly and unknowingly, not 100% clear that the unknowingly would work, but after the shayla, if it happens. If you ask me, if you find something on Pesach, which was unknowing, you didn't know about it before, if I were you, I'd just throw it out. You're throwing out John Brown's property. He wouldn't mind. As long as he gets it's worked out at the end, he's not going to bother him too much. So that may be done, even though technically speaking, it's someone else's property. Let's go further. In order to effect the sale, the buyer agrees to pay the agent the sum of the estimated fair value. Market value of all of these chametz is determined by 3 recognized experts according to the accepted market value prevalent today in New York City, which shall be paid by the buyer as follows. 1. 2 cents per person now. Likely that silver gone up in price and therefore used to be a half a penny. Not even 1 penny can't do it. You need 2 cents. All right? You need 2 cents. Some years it was even more than that. 2. The rest on or before Tuesday, April, again, a different date this year. It means Tuesday night, or early you have to pay. The understanding is that the sale is absolute and effective immediately. No conditions. And that the balance due is considered a debt from buyer to seller, the non-payment of which shall in no way affect the validity of buyer's title to the chametz sold. It's like if you don't pay, you owe money. It doesn't mean that the sale is canceled. Risk of loss and loss of value is borne by the buyer. What's the reason for this? It sounds a little bit unfair, somewhat. The risk of loss seems burned down. Anything can happen. Things get lost. The reason why we impose it on the buyer is not because we're trying to hurt him financially, but rather, we're not permitted to have any achrayas on chametz. Perhaps it's in someone else's property, it's okay, but that's, we saw before, not so simple. So we ask the buyer to assume the risk. So if the price goes down, you have to make it up. That's called loss of value. What about loss itself? Oh, that's high stakes. I'm not going to go down in value too much in a week, but it gets burned down. Lost. Gone. So the person, the buyer, accepts the responsibility. So it says, call tonight to Mom and Kaya. If he accepts it, he accepts it. You know, technically speaking, it might be a little bit of a stretch under normal conditions, but if he accepts it, it certainly seems to be valid. You know, Mr. Brown is buying a lot of chametz, not just a mom and pop level, but basically a wholesale level. And whenever he gets to this line, he'd be worried if someplace burns down and come after him for who knows how much money for the chametz contained therein. So one may tell him in sort of in a cute way, but not too loud, that the only copy of this document is being held by him. Imply that if he would try to deny it, that he would probably prevail. We're not recommending it to be less than candid, but in terms of the risk factor, that's just to be taken into consideration. Let's go on. In addition, the boy gives an item of personal private to the agent. It's called chalipin. And they shake hands, kosi tumta. These additional methods of acquisition are employed because of questions about the effectiveness of each method. It is emphasized that each sale and method of sale is independent and therefore unaffected by any invalid sale or method of sale performed in the agreement. Okay? This should be fairly self-explanatory. It's called severability. Everything is separated from each other. If one works, it's good enough. Because you have many backups. Okay, it is further agreed that the agent on behalf of each of the sellers hereby leases to the buyer the closets, cabinets, storage rooms, garages, basements, and other areas in the premise of each of the sellers where the apple described chametz have you found, including the locations specifically enumerated upon the apple mentioned in the inventory sheets, and including further, any other locations within the premise of the sellers where such chametz may be found. What if you're a renter? And you rent out. It's in the lease. You're not rented out. So we have over here in parentheses, in the event that any of the sellers may be tenants of the premises they presently occupy, with respect to such sellers, this provision shall be intended to convey a sublease of the areas where such chametz may be located. You're not supposed to sublease. No. You shouldn't sublease because there'll be noise, there'll be other. Mr. Brown has never actually moved into any of the places subleased to him. I don't think that the spirit of the document, maybe even the letter, would somehow teach us we're not permitted to go through the sublease. So I think it's okay. But no matter what's written in the piece of paper, in the contract, in the lease. Let's go a little further. The duration of this lease agreement shall be from Monday before 11:30 or this year 35 a.m. to, again, approximately 9 o'clock, Eastern Daylight Savings Time, on Tuesday the following. Now what happens if someone is not further east, for whom we must do an earlier sale, as you mentioned earlier, the Mechiras Yud Gimel of the 13th, what if that person is further west? We can't buy the chametz back because it's still Pesach when we buy it back here. So you have to delay it. Put in a delay of as many hours as necessary. Usually it doesn't go past 3, usually. California, from New York, usually doesn't go past that. That's then and only then is the chametz being purchased once again by the rabbi with the permission of the original buyer. That's what's going to normally happen. Okay, in consideration for the foregoing rental provision, the buyer agrees and hereby does pay to the agent an additional sum of 2 cents for each of the enumerated sellers. In addition, the aforementioned a method of exchange and handshake, what's called chalip and tzitumta, are used to effect the rental. By force, Mikoach, Kraft, is the way the Chofetz Chaim translated into German. Kraft, by force of the execution of the rental agreement, the buyer also acquires ownership of all aforementioned chametz, which is hereby transferred in the best legal form known as agav. This should be spelled out before the actual picking up of the money. Further, by virtue of the buyer's rights in these rented areas, storage areas, all chametz contained, there is acquired by the buyer, parentheses, chotzer. So agav and chotzer are kinyanim which do not work directly for movables, metatlin, but they will work to acquire the lease of the property, and then once that happens, so you can be koneh be'agav or be'chotzer. This is an important concept. This is many kinyanim. We'll just summarize in a minute. In the event that the authorization forms authorize the agent to lease the entire home, the agent on behalf of those sellers, he leases those homes entirely to the buyer. That's the Peshi guy goes away, wants to make sure everything is sold, there's nothing left. So he introduced that sentence recently to cover that particular scenario. This is all important to make sure the Mechira really works. Let's go again. Next page. It is further agreed that the buyer shall have rights access to the premise of the sellers in each of them in order to gain access to their respect of storage areas herein above described. In the event the buyer shall require keys to gain access to any of the premises described herein, they shall be made available to him upon reasonable demand to the agent. That's why it's important that there be someone near in the city or near where I live to be able to produce the keys upon demand. Expressly intended by the parties, the two of the agreement shall be bound in accordance with the laws of the state of New York and according to the laws of the Torah. Son and my husband is Riverdale. All is firm and established. HaKol Shiru V'Kayam. To summarize the Kinyonim, let's just go slowly. So to sell the Chometz proper directly, we have three. There's Kesef, and there's Chalipin, and then it's just called Situm, the shaking hand, and the Minik HaSocher. We do all three just to play it safe. To transfer the, or lease, I should say, the properties, we have those same three Kinyonim, and we have an additional three Kinyonim, which will work to enable the individual who leased the property to the non-Jew to have the non-Jew acquire the chametz proper. One is called agav. One is called chotzer. They're different. The kedushin you see on the yeshiva, there are many differences. And then the final one is called shtar. By signing the piece of paper, it says signed by the rabbi and by the buyer. By signing it, the rabbi is basically saying that I'm signing on behalf of all those who appointed me. And in this way, the deal is done. That's Mr. Brown's constant refrain. The deal is done, and this is done in that fashion. So shtar does not work for metalvin either, but shtar works for Sirus Karka, and therefore the shtar is kinya number 9, which works only for the karka, not for the metalvin, but it enables the transfer of the chomet as well. I'm sorry it took so long to discuss these matters. If there are any questions, I'm happy to take them privately. Chag kosher v'sameach.
Thank you, Rebbe, very much. We wish you all a chag kosher v'sameach. We hope after Yontif we can continue to ask Rebbe Shilas. Thank you very much.
Also, bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.